Hi, you are listening to Parents Rule. I'm your host, Pat Montgomery. My website is parentsrulewithpat.com. And you know, the show is called Parents Rule because as parents, not only are we the coolest of creatures, but we set the tone in our homes. If there's harmony, we've cultivated it. If there's disharmony, that's our fault too. How many of you out there ever watched any episodes of Little House on the Prairie? Or watched them all like I did? I'm still watching them in reruns, actually. My guest today is Melissa Anderson, better known on Little House days as Melissa Sue Anderson. And she played Mary Ingalls on Little House. And Melissa, I'm just so excited that you're with me today.
Oh, well, I'm very excited to be here. Thank you. I'm just having a tiny problem hearing you.
Are you? Can you work on that, Julie? Okay, is that any better?
Yes, it is.
Okay,
thank you.
Okay, good. Okay. Melissa starred in Little House on the Prairie from 1974 until 1983 and won the role over 200 others that auditioned. And before that, she was doing commercials for Mattel and French's Mustard. I did not know that.
I thought
that, that must have been fun.
Actually, my French's Mustard was a really fun one. It was shot on the beach. And I seem to remember something with a giant blow up mustard bottle or something, and sort of playing volleyball or something like that with this mustard bottle, possibly. anyway, it was fun. It was a very fun commercial.
The other thing that surprised me was that you were the only cast member nominated after all those years for an Emmy on Little House.
Right.
So many good episodes and so many episodes that you just had to have a Kleenex box sitting next to the couch. You know, and congratulations on that. That's awesome.
Well, thank you.
And then finally, a year later, you actually won an Emmy for your performance in Which Mother Is Mine, an ABC After School special.
Right.
So that's cool.
Yes.
And you also won an award, a Spanish Tipi de Oro award for Best Foreign Actress for Little House.
I don't even remember that one. I'm sure you're right.
Yeah, it's on the internet. Yeah, it must be true.
If it's written somewhere, it's probably true.
It's on the internet. It must be true. And you've written a book called The Way I See It, A Look Back on My Life, at My Life on Little House.
Right.
This is really an interesting book. It didn't take me too long to get through it because it was interesting. It kept seeing what was happening next, and it was kind of fun, actually. You would talk about some of the episodes, and I go, oh, I remember that one. I remember seeing that one. So that's pretty cool.
That's what I was hoping for the fans, you know, that they would, or people that, you know, maybe not diehard fans, but people that had seen the show, that they would remember. That's what I was hoping. And then I also thought that even just fans of mine or fans of the 70s, and maybe 80s even, would, you know, get a kick out of it as well. So I was trying to write a book that I would like to read, you know, that wouldn't be dull to me.
Right.
And that, you know, having done it all, you know, it could be. So I was trying to make it, you know, somewhat interesting. So I hope I succeeded.
Well, you did. I mean, it's very interesting to go over some of those episodes and get some of the backstory to some of that stuff and some of the interesting stories about the different actors that were on the show. I had no idea that Sean Penn had a bit part in Little House.
Right. It wasn't even a part. It was just, he was just an extra. He was just one of the people in the crowd.
Yeah, isn't that
so
funny?
Yeah, he was there because his dad was directing.
Oh, well, that'll help. You know, you talk in the book about the fact that you were shy. How in the world did you get into acting?
Well, how or why?
Well, both.
I was dancing at the time because I had terrible asthma as a kid, and the doctor believed in developing the lungs as much as possible. So I took you know, dance lessons and acrobatics and ballet and ice skating and swimming and all kinds of things. And so anyway, I was dancing, and my dancing teacher had been hired by Paramount in the 1930s when Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor were huge, and he actually taught Gene Kelly.
Wow.
And unfortunately, they had to release him from his contract because he didn't have any acting experience. He was a great dancer. He had great footwork, but he couldn't cut it as far as the acting went. So he thought I had this potential as a dancer, and he didn't want the same thing to happen to me. So anyway, I think that went on. He was talking to my mother about that, I think, and that went on for about a year, on and off. And finally, I think I got the idea. I realized what I was hearing, and I thought that sounded fun. So then my parents were kind of, you know, they thought they would let me try it because I probably wouldn't like it. And I probably wouldn't get an agent. I would have to get an agent first, and I probably wouldn't be able to get one. And then even if I did, I wouldn't like the auditions, taking my time after school and things like that. And so anyway, it ultimately, I did get an agent, and I didn't mind the auditions, and so it kind of backfired on them, and they kind of went ahead and thought they'd see how it went, and that's kind of how it happened.
Oh, that's
but
cool.
It was good for me because... I think there are a lot of shy actors and a lot of shy comedians as well. I think, you know, you're playing a character, so it kind of gets you out of yourself, and it makes it, you know, easier to relate, kind of. So it was a good, you know, it was a great experience for me as a shy kid.
I think that's great. I remember I had a job one time where I had to, and I was always very shy, and I wasn't the one that would work a room. You know, I would walk into a party and find a corner and stay there. But I had this job where I had to work the room. I had to go around and shake hands and meet people and talk to them. And the advice I was given was pretend that you're that kind of person. Act it. And so I did. And before you knew it, it got to where it wasn't so bad. And now I'm a pretty outgoing person. It changed.
That's great.
Me.
That's great.
But so acting can do that.
In the book, it's possible.
Yeah, in the book you talk about signing your contract and making that decision, that commitment to the TV show, and you say, I can't imagine making that kind of life-altering decision for one of my kids.
Right.
How did your parents do that? I mean, I understand what you're saying. That would be very hard, and you don't know what they're going to be getting into. And
right. Well, I think it's one of those things. I think it's, you know, I was an only child. I think it's that may have, you know, been part of it. You know, I think it's, do you risk your child hating you for a few days or a week or so, or do you think maybe it would be a great thing, and why should we stand in the way? And, well, it's gone this far. This is exactly what could happen, and it did. And now what do we do? I mean, I'm sure they had all those thoughts, but I think for me, I never, you know, it wouldn't have, with my kids, it would never get that far, so I wouldn't be in that position. But you know, if you do go, you know, go on an audition for a series and you end up getting it, you know, the chances are you're not going to, but if you did, you have to be prepared that you might.
Right.
So so I guess maybe somewhere they were sort of prepared, I don't know. But I yeah, like I said in the book, that's exactly how I feel. I mean, it makes me stammer just thinking about it.
So you didn't encourage your kids.
I wouldn't want my kids in the business. But
no, you wouldn't?
No,
why?
No.
Was it that difficult for you?
It wasn't. No, it was fine for me. It was okay for me. It worked out for me. But I don't think, you know, I'm not the norm. And
true.
And I just don't think it's, you know, I think kids should be kids. I don't think kids should work. I think kids should be kids. And, you know, it's such a small period of time, really, in your life that, you know, I think that they should be allowed to be just kids. You know, that's my feeling.
Well, and that was hard for you to be just a kid, right? I mean, you didn't go to regular school. It was hard to go out in public.
Right. Well, it was hard. Yeah, it was always hard. Once, even when I was doing commercials, it was hard to go to school. You know, I'd get a commercial, then I'd be gone for a day or maybe two, and then I would go back to school, and the kids would tease me. This one girl in particular, I think her name was Melissa, actually, and she would tease me, and it was just awful. And you know, for being out and for doing, you know, a commercial, and it was terrible. I, you know, and for somebody like me, you know,
right,
it was just really bad. And that's nothing compared to what some kids go through with bullying and all that, which I just can't even fathom. But you know, it was not fun. And so I was happy that I didn't have to go back to school, even though I switched schools a lot and found some schools with nicer kids. But still, I was happy that I worked so much. I worked 8 months out of the year on Little House, and then the rest of the time, the other 4 months, I was usually working on something else. And that was great, because then I didn't have to go back to school.
How did you get your education then?
I had a teacher on the set for 3 hours a day every day. So
you went to school 3 hours a day? My kids would have loved that.
Right. Well, I wrote about that in the book. That's what I said, actually, my kids said. But, you know, it's private. You know, it's like private tutoring. Usually the other Melissa was there. And then when I was off doing something else, it was just me and the teacher. And, I mean, you know, you can't fool around. You can't, you know, kind of try to hide for the day, or, you know, you don't feel like answering something, or, you know, you're stuck. So 3 hours of concentrated studying with the teacher standing right there is, you know, a different ball of wax.
I just can't imagine.
We had to learn our lines and everything for the next day.
Yeah.
You know, that was sort of your homework every night. And that could be, depending on how much you had to do, that could be hard.
Well, yeah. I mean, you had to learn your lines and do your homework and all of that. I don't know how you kept up with it all. That's pretty hard. So you wouldn't encourage your kids to go into acting. Did they ever ask to?
No, they didn't. They didn't. But no, I wouldn't have. I wouldn't. Yeah, no, definitely wouldn't have.
Well, are there some things that your parents did to help you stay grounded? I mean, you turned out to be such a great role model through your teen years and growing into an adult, and you appeared to have stayed grounded and know who you are and stay out of the Hollywood hype. How did you manage that, and did your parents do anything to help you with that?
Well, I don't think they didn't treat me as though I was anything special, so that helped. And I still had chores to do and all that stuff. So I guess, you know, that was pretty much it. You know, every time something would come up that might, you know, feel like I was being treated differently than a regular kid, they kind of discouraged that from happening. So I think that was kind of what they did. And also, I didn't, you know, a lot of people have asked me, you know, why didn't I turn out like Lindsay Lohan, or why didn't I, you know, and I think it's really, a lot of it also was the kind of person I am, which is, I, you know, I'm just afraid. You know, I don't like to get in trouble. So, you don't experiment a lot when you're afraid of the consequences, and I always was, so that was good. My son is sort of like that, and it's a good quality to have, actually, because it kind of keeps you walking the straight and narrow, you know.
Well, that's true. That's true. I was like that. I had a daughter, though, that she didn't care. You know, if she wanted to do something, she would think about the consequences, and if it seemed like it was worth it to her, then she'd just take the consequences. She didn't care.
Ah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
But we've got to take a short break, and we'll be right back with more with Melissa Anderson on Parents Rule.
A busy dog is a happy dog, and we love happy dogs at Bow Wow Bungalow. Drop your best pal off to play with his doggy friends while you're at work or running errands. You won't feel guilty about leaving him behind, and he won't eat your sofa out of loneliness and frustration. At Bow Wow Bungalow, we provide your dog with companionship, fun, and full-time monitoring in our gorgeous fenced location full of toys. Bow Wow Bungalow is open in Crabapple Tuesday through Friday from 7 to 7. Visit our website at atlantadogtrainer.com.
32 million. That's the number of active and veteran men and women who put their lives on the line to protect America. They come to our rescue. They protect our freedom. They're firefighters, police officers, our military. They are America's bravest, and we want to thank them. I'm David Fox, and with my wife Jennifer, we started Brave Spirits. We handcrafted Valor Vodka, First Inn Whiskey, Standing Guard Gin, and At Ease Rum to honor and celebrate America's military, fire, and police. For every bottle sold, Brave Spirits donates $2 to charities that help keep them safe, recover, and celebrate. Brave Spirits are proudly made entirely in the United States, using America's workforce and ingredients, and we're the only spirits company to do so. To find Brave Spirits, visit bravespirits.com. That's bravespirits.com. Help us support these brave men and women. It's their duty to protect this country. It's our duty to thank them.
Valor Vodka, First Inn Whiskey, At Ease Rum, Standing Guard Gin, 40% alcohol by volume. Bottled by Brave Spirits, Scobieville, New Jersey, Nardwick, PA, copyright 2008.
I'm David Fox, inviting you to grab a bottle of Brave Spirits today. Toast America's bravest, and please celebrate responsibly.
For over 20 years, Joe Cochran, owner of Metro Carpet Steam, has provided high-quality, affordable carpet cleaning services to Sandy Springs and the surrounding areas. Joe is the only carpet service I trust to clean my carpet and should be your choice, too. With hundreds of references, Joe does the most thorough cleaning available. A proud participant of the shopping spree, call Metro Carpet Steam owner Joe Cochran for an estimate today. 404-843-3827. Again, 404-843-3827. 3827.
Do you want to sell your home and walk away from the closing with the most money possible? Century 21 Clickit is the answer you are looking for. MLS, advertising, virtual tours, lot boxes, and contract forms are all just a click away at c21clickit.com. Call 678-344-1600 to save thousands on premium flat fee listing services.
You're back with Parents Rule. I'm your host, Pat Montgomery. My blog is parentsrulepat.blogspot.com. You'd think I'd know my own blog, wouldn't you? My guest today is Melissa Anderson, and we're talking about her book, The Way I See It, A Look Back at My Life on Little House. But Melissa has done more than just Little House on the Prairie. She starred on several episodes of The Brady Bunch and The Love Boat, and she's done several made-for-TV movies and was in the series The Equalizer, and most recently she was First Lady in the miniseries 10.5 Apocalypse. So you're still working, right? Melissa? Okay, we've lost her for a minute. We're going to try to get her back here. But she has been working on throughout her life. She's been working. She's done several feature films like Dead Men Don't Die and Where Pigeons Go to Die, Return of Sam McLeod. She's done actually some scary things like Happy Birthday to Me, which was a horror show, and she's done some episodes of Fantasy Island. So she's been busy as far as working as an actress, and she's I don't know if she's got anything planned going on right now. As soon as we get her back, we'll ask her if she's got anything on the works coming up, but her book is really good, The Way I See It, and it talks about The Way I See It, A Look Back at My Life on Little House, and it talks about what it was like to be on Little House on the Prairie, and a lot of emotional behind the scenes stuff and stuff that was going on. She talks about the cast and the crew. She talks a lot about Michael Landon, who she said was someone that she could lean on and she could trust his opinion about things, and she went to him for help, and he was always there for her. In fact, when he did his movie, The Loneliest Runner, which was autobiographical to some extent, he asked her to be the girl that played his girlfriend in that show. So, Melissa, have we got you back?
Yes.
There we are.
I don't know what happened.
I know, technology. It's all live radio. You never know. I've gotten used to it. So I was talking more about your book while you were away. One of the things I wanted to ask you was, there are episodes in your book where you describe witnessing an event or hearing something about someone that you admired that disappointed you. And I'm not going to talk about those on the air, but because I want people to buy your book and find out what they are. But how did you handle that kind of disappointment about somebody that you admire? You know, it's kind of growing up fast kind of thing.
Well, I think it was good. I think ultimately, I think it was a good, really, life lesson, or a couple of at least lessons for me, because I wasn't able to behave like most kids would, which was jump up and down or stomp your feet and say, "I'm not going to be your friend anymore,"
right,
or something like that. I had to come to terms with it and deal with it, because, you know, Mike Landon was my boss, and I mean, I had to see him every day and work with him every day and do whatever it was he told me every day. So I had to figure out, you know, that in order to get along with people, you don't always agree with everything they do or say necessarily, but you use all the things that you do have in common and all the things that you do like about them, and you go on. So I think it was actually good, you know, to learn that early.
I think that's good, and that's a lesson that you could pass on to your children in
right.
a very concrete way by explaining to them what happened to you.
Right, right.
If, while you were on the show, were you very restricted as far as hairstyles and activities and that kind of thing, or were you pretty much allowed to do whatever?
Oh, no, yes. yes. Very restricted about everything, yes. We had a contract with NBC that didn't permit any dangerous or reckless activities, you know, no motorcycle riding, probably even with a helmet, you know, dirt bikes, all that stuff. I'm sure all those things were in it. I have a kind of humorous little bit in my book about going skiing,
mm-hmm.
and that was the last time I did that, first and last time as a kid. And hairstyles, that was always tough, because, no, you had to try to keep your hair looking like a pioneer's in the 1870s. But I really, 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 really wanted hair like Farrah Fawcett's hair.
Didn't we all?
Of course, I didn't have that kind of thick, curly hair that she had, that she could blow out into those great loose curls with the fringe in the front, you know. I didn't have hair like that, but I cut my own Farrah Fawcett wings, and then a professional actually fixed them. But that was as far as I could really, well, no, I did something else too, but at that time, that was as far as I could go. I was around 13 or 14, I guess, then. And that wasn't too bad, because that hair could still fit in combs that I wore to hold up the sides of my hair. So it still fit. So that was all right. That wasn't awful. They weren't thrilled, but it wasn't awful. And then what I did do that wasn't so good, though, was I got a perm in my hair for The Survival of Dana, which is a TV movie I did for CBS. And I wanted to have, like, kind of really curly, almost frizzy, not frizzy, but super curly hair for the bad girl scenes, for the kind of, not really bad, but, you know,
yeah.
out partying kind of girl scenes. And I wanted to have blown out, just loosely curled hair for the good girl scenes. And that did not work as well for Little House. It was really hard. They didn't have straightening irons like they have now then. And it makes me feel so old when I have to talk like that.
I know.
It's true. And it wasn't easy to blow it out. It was hard. So that it looked good curly, but it was hard to get it straighter. So that was kind of frowned upon. That wasn't so good. So anyway, as a teenager growing up, those restrictions, especially really just the hair, was, you know, I felt it because I wanted to be, you know, like every other kid. But on the other hand, I was responsible. I did know I was lucky to have this great job, and I did appreciate that. So I was trying really hard to be responsible and do the right thing, but sometimes I would just get carried away.
Most kids do.
Right, exactly, right.
So the episode that you were nominated for an Emmy was the one where Mary goes blind.
Right.
And honest to goodness, I'll tell you the truth, I was talking to my dad on the way to the station today, and he said, "Wasn't she the blind one?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "She's blind in real life, right?" No. He said, "Really? She just did it so well."
Oh. Well, so that's, you know, that's a really nice thing to hear. And I did hear that from people. People wrote to me and said it was so nice of the producers to write that in and to keep you on, and and yeah. So it was a great compliment, really, and it is a great compliment. I worked hard to perfect that blind gaze, but once I did, I kind of got good at it. You know, it kind of it became sort of second nature for a while. I remember the first thing I did that was you know, something other than Little House was a Love Boat, I think, after I'd gone blind, in the first rehearsal I caught myself still doing the blind thing, and luckily I looked around, you know, like, oh my God, did anybody notice? Because I was so used to it, I'd done it so long, you know, but it's such a concentrated thing that, you know, you get so used to doing it. And I was so embarrassed, but nobody noticed.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, what was the response from, or did you have any, from the blind community?
From who, sorry?
The blind community.
Oh, yes, I did. I received letters and from the blind that watched. There was a big blind following, actually, of, you know, people who couldn't see, but watched the show, and I received lots of letters, and that you know, they were very proud, I think, and that they knew that I had done a good job, and they felt that it was important, and that it wasn't silly or cartoonish the way it was portrayed, and you know, again, it made me feel really good.
Well, and you had a lot of things on there that they actually use, like the way they put food on a plate and that kind of thing, right?
Right, right. They use a clock system so that they know where everything is located on the plate, which makes sense. You know, your vegetables might be at like 2 o'clock or something, and your meat or something might be at 6 o'clock, and like that. And I thought that was a great idea.
Yeah.
And they taught me how to pour. You know, if you were going to pour something into a cup, how you know where to stop is by putting the tip of your finger inside that glass or cup, and that way, when you pour with the other hand, once it reaches your finger, you know that that's where to stop. So I thought that was great too. Yeah, and all kinds of things. How to walk with a cane.
I just thought it was really well done.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Well, you know, it did take a lot of work. I went to the Foundation for the Junior Blind and worked with teachers there, and then one of them came to the set during those two episodes, the two-part episodes, to make sure, you know, that everything was okay in case any technical questions came up. And, you know, it was exciting. It was, it had been so frightening because I thought that they were, you know, once they made my character blind, I would just be written out. I thought, what in the world are they going to have me do? And eventually it was difficult because they kind of did run out of things for me to do. And, you know, with the period of the show, and the fact that I was a pioneer, it was a blind pioneer. it was difficult to find.
You've got a chapter in the book that's called something about I was a blind pioneer.
And you thought you had trouble. I was a blind pioneer, and you thought you had problems, right? Right. Yeah, because I called myself blind and boring for a long time because there were episodes where they would just have my character there for audience recognition, just to make sure that everyone knew that Mary was still alive.
Yeah.
And then they would do other episodes, big two-part episodes, where yet another tragedy
had befallen Mary.
Exactly. So that was just, it was just too much. It was either another tragedy or, you know, a show that I shouldn't be in at all. That's why I ultimately left. I fulfilled my 7-year contract and did two episodes the 8th season. But then I left because I couldn't keep doing that.
Well, and the show was winding down. And when they brought the other little girl in to be Nellie Jr. and started replaying stuff that Nellie had done early on in the show, it was kind of...
Exactly. That's what they do, you know.
Yeah, people kind of lost interest, yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, they start to just recycle old shows. Yeah, that's what was happening. So it was good. I thought, you know, all in all, it was a good time to go. It was good for me, and it was good to go out while the show was still on top.
Absolutely. You know? We've got to take another break, and we'll be right back with more on Parents Rule.
The Atlanta chapter of the Entrepreneurs Organization is comprised exclusively of business founders and CEOs operating companies in the metro Atlanta area. It enables entrepreneurs to learn and grow from each other, leading to greater business success and an enriched personal life. Today, EO Atlanta is among the world's strongest EO Global chapters and recently received rock star status from EO Global. Interested in tapping into a peer group of entrepreneurs? Then join us by visiting eonetwork.org. EO Atlanta, helping local entrepreneurs drive their dreams.
Tartar Farm and Ranch Equipment is the nation's largest manufacturer of farm gates and animal management and feeding equipment, producing more than 850 products. Their branded products are carried in the nation's best-known farm and ranch stores. It's a brand that means rugged dependability, and it's used and trusted by farmers and ranchers around the world. Learn more about the Tartar Farm and Ranch product line by visiting www.tartarfarmandranch.com.
Atlantic Sealand Properties is your source for elegant beach vacation accommodations. Specializing in the private beach resort of Fripp Island, South Carolina, Atlantic Sealand Properties offers the best in customer service and elegant accommodations. Whether you're looking for a cozy two-bedroom condo overlooking the extraordinary views of the marsh, or you need a fine front row home, Atlantic Sealand Properties can help. Incredible sunsets and memories of a lifetime await. Mention Bold Ventures Radio when you reserve your vacation home and receive special incentives. Call 843-524-7073. That's 843-524-7073.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200, or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
I'm Pat Montgomery, and you are listening to Parents Rule. My guest today is Melissa Anderson. She has written the book, The Way I See It, A Look Back at My Life on Little House. And, you know, we've been talking about Little House on the Prairie and all that stuff. If you had a friend whose child wanted to be an actor and the friend was okay with it, what would you tell them? What piece of advice would you give them?
To make sure that their education, the child's education, doesn't come second.
Okay.
To
what about the child? What advice would you give that child?
To the child. The same thing. And to really have other interests, to get, you know, to not be so focused on just the entertainment business, you know, or acting, to try to develop other interests and have something to fall back on.
That's really good, because show business is, you know, it's not a guaranteed life for the rest of your life.
Right.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how good you are or what kind of training you've had, or a lot of it, you know, depends on being in the right place at the right time. Or, you know, I remember as a kid, at one point I think we lived next door to an artist who there's a name for this, but I can't think of what it is. Graphic artist, I guess, who drew the sketches for advertisers for commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if he drew a picture of a little girl hanging from a tree in a polka dot shirt and ponytails, then and a little girl walked into the meeting when they're interviewing little girls with ponytails and a polka dot shirt, a lot of times that little girl would get the job, whether she was great or she wasn't, just because, you know, that's the way people are. So a lot of it, you know, is I think what it really comes down to is you have to have the talent and be so that if you get lucky enough, you can actually get the job. And, you know, there are so many great actors that just can't make a living working that,
right.
That's why I wouldn't recommend it. I would rather see people do something else and use the passion that they have for acting, you know, in some local way, maybe in their community theater or on some level like that, because at least they'd get the joy out of it without all the pain.
Well, that makes sense.
It can be, you know, actors, you have to walk around with your heart on your sleeve, and then, you know, you're stabbed in the heart all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you're not tall enough, you're too fat, you know, you're too old, you're too young, you're just not the way we see it, you know, you're not right, sorry. You know, it's a hard, really hard business, and you hate to see people go through that.
And you didn't want to see your children go through it. Tell me about your children. You've got two kids.
Right, right. Well, my daughter is 19 and just finished her freshman year of college, and my son is almost 14 on June 14th. He'll be 14, and he's great, and he's going to be in the ninth grade next year, and they both speak fluent French as well as English, obviously.
Well, you live in Canada, so
right,
that helps that.
But they spoke French before. They went to the Lycée Français in Los Angeles, so they actually both have been speaking French since they were three, which is part of the reason we moved to Montreal, because as opposed to another city in Canada, because I thought that they would be able to use their French more here, which turned out to be right. And my son speaks almost fluent, practically fluent Italian as well, and my daughter speaks fluent Spanish as well.
Wow.
So, and some Italian also. So
oh, that's great.
They're very well-rounded as far as languages go, and they're very handy to travel with.
I bet
very
they are.
Great, actually.
I may call you and ask to borrow them sometime.
Really? I mean, it's like, well, it's very funny. I just took my son on a really, I owed him big time. He had never been to Europe. My daughter and I have gone before, but he hadn't, and so we went on a big trip when I finished the book, actually. We went on a big trip to Italy and Paris, actually. Paris and Rome and Venice. So he, you know, so it was very funny. We got on the airplane to leave Canada, and the person sitting in the seat directly behind me is his Italian teacher.
No.
my son couldn't get over it. It was so weird. And he said, "You've got a very good tour guide there, because he'll be great. He's very, very good." And he was. And he was complimented on his Italian that he hasn't been, he hasn't been speaking Italian as long as he's been speaking French, obviously. So he was complimented on his Italian even when I wasn't with him. So I knew that people meant it. You know, they told him he was speaking perfect Italian.
Great.
And, you know, that his teacher should be commended. And so that was really great. And of course, his French in Paris was, you know, terrific. And everyone was surprised and happy, you know, that he lived in Canada and he was an American, that he spoke such good French. And so that's always nice to hear. So anyway, they're
cool.
Terrific kids. They both have good heads on their shoulders, and I think they'll grow up to be. Well, my daughter is already grown up, but I think they'll be both very good adults.
That's great. What's your daughter studying?
She's in the School of International Service now in Washington D.C. So she is doing a lot of world politics and
mm-hmm.
international this and that, and
mm-hmm.
She doesn't really know yet exactly what she wants to do. But my friend Pam, my friend Pam from the book,
Pam and Tam.
Now I said, Pam, you're going to be forever Pam. You know, Pam from the book. she has always called my daughter a diplomat. She always said, I always knew you were going to be a diplomat. I told you when you were two, you were going to be a diplomat. So it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Well, here, I'll tell you what. I have a son who has a degree in international relations.
Uh-huh.
And he works at an embassy in Colombia right now.
Wow.
So you've got my cell phone number. If you want her to talk to him, I'll be glad to set that up.
Oh, wow.
And they could talk and, you know, she could kind of get the skinny from him about, you know, what direction she could go in based on her interests.
Oh, sure. Or maybe, you know, maybe she could even email him.
Absolutely.
Maybe that would work out because she's very into that. If that might work out.
Yeah, absolutely. Give me a call.
Oh, maybe we could exchange email addresses.
Yeah, absolutely. Give
That'd
me a call.
That'd be terrific. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. But you've got my cell phone number because,
you know,
I gave it to Robert.
Really, you know, she doesn't really know, quite what she, you know, but obviously with the languages and the. You know, that's her thing.
Yeah.
She started out, it was funny, actually. She was in a different program in the first semester. It was business, language, and culture studies. And she thought it would be more language and culture studies, and it was a lot more business. And she was like, oh, no. She felt like she wasn't contributing enough to her little group that they'd broken off into these little groups. And
uh-huh.
She just felt really just not, you know, not herself there.
Yeah.
And I kind of knew that was probably going to happen, but, you know, you have to let them experience these things, and you can't tell them anything.
No, you can't.
So, you know, and I wasn't even sure, but I kind of figured. So I thought she would be more comfortable where she is now, but she made that switch, and yes, she's she did well enough. She did fine.
That's great.
In the first semester, but she did really, really well, straight A's in the second semester. So
that's great. Oh, he loves it. He loves what
he
does.
Well, that's great. It's great to know. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And Griffin, your son, what does he like? What's
he
want to
like?
Be?
Well, I always thought, well, right now he loves basketball. He's not particularly tall, but he loves basketball. But and he's very, you know, he's good for someone who's never been on a team itself. He's going to try out for the school team next year.
Cool.
Or in August. Or September, whenever it is that they try out. But he loves basketball. He loves karate, and he used to want to be like Anderson Cooper or Rick Sanchez.
Oh, really?
And I thought that was great—a great vocation, really, for him. But now he says that he doesn't think he wants to be on television. So I thought, ah, rats, I thought you knew what you wanted. but you know, he's interesting, my son. He's fun. Like, when we traveled together, he would, I remember being in the Coliseum with him, and he would say something, he would bring something up that had something to do with, I don't know, the Coliseum or the Romans or something, but it wasn't what you would expect to hear. Like, it was something slightly different. And it was interesting. He's very good at telling interesting facts and interesting stories and relating it to the situation. So he's a good listener, and he's a good you know, a good teacher as well. He'd make a good teacher, but he doesn't want to do that.
It's amazing, isn't it?
So anyway, I don't know what he's going to do, but he's a great kid. He's super nice and he's very polite and he's, you know, a very fun. He's funny. He does great impersonations. And he was doing my daughter the other day, and that was hilarious.
They're
going to work together at camp this year. My son's going to be a CIT, a counselor in training, and my daughter is a counselor. And he knows that, you know, he was talking about if he went on the field trips that he's not going to, he's decided he's not going to go. He doesn't have to go. And he's not going to go because he knows he'll just get pushed around by her. He knows it'll be like, Griff, could you go sit with the
yeah.
little 6-year-old blues? Can you just sit and watch them? I need to, you know, I need to go and take a dip. I'm hot. And then, okay, I'm back. But could you go to the boys' bathroom?
Yeah, exactly.
With so he was taking her off. It was hilarious.
Oh, that's hysterical.
He was doing it just like her, and it was very funny.
So, we've got to take a short break again, unfortunately, but we'll be right back with more with Melissa Anderson.
The Business Builders Seminar Series presents cutting-edge business services and products in an academic setting to top executives and business owners. Business Builders features a pool of best practice solution providers to educate, enlighten, and implement solutions. The seminars create more effective and efficient management skills while vastly improving business profitability and success. Business Builders has grown from the initial seminar of about 50 guests to an ongoing program attracting over 100 top executives for each topic. For more information, visit businessbuildersteam.org.
Hi, this is Kate Copsey inviting you to listen year-round to America's Homegrown Veggie Show every Saturday at 10 a.m.
So your dog is breaking down the door trying to scare off the delivery man, or maybe she's still staining your carpet. You don't have to put up with bad doggy behaviors. Atlanta Dog Trainer is the answer to all your dog dilemmas. Atlanta Dog Trainer services are from certified canine behavior and training specialists. They have worked with over 45 veterinarians in the metro area and have excellent references. A trained dog makes a happy owner. A trained owner makes a happier dog. From obedience courses to one-on-one solutions, visit AtlantaDogTrainer.com.
Interior design with style, flair, and sensibility. These words define the approach that Leanne Culpepper has developed for over 20 years in creating dynamic and comfortable environments for a diverse clientele, including homeowners, boat and yacht owners, government officials, corporate executives, doctors, and entrepreneurs. Leanne has won local and national acclaim and is available for design consultation at 770-549-2383. Please visit her website at www.culpeppercarpets.com.
This is Pat Montgomery, and you're listening to Parents Rule. My website is parentsrulewithpat.com, and my book is Now You Know What I Know, Parenting Wisdom of a Grandmother. Melissa, are you a strict parent?
Yes. That is a hard answer, actually.
I know, it depends on the circumstance.
I really decided that when I had my daughter that I looked at the kids that I knew and the families that I knew and the ones that I thought worked the best, and that family was the one that I'm thinking of was quite strict, and I thought, okay, then that's the way it should be, because those kids I thought turned out really well, and so that's what I did. And I think overall it's worked out well. My kids would say that I'm more strict than a lot of their friends, especially my daughter would definitely say that. She has said that.
My daughter told me every day.
But, you know, I think it's, you know, you're back to that, well, you know, you're not so-and-so, and this is the way, you know, we don't work that way. This is the way it works here. Blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's been good. I think it's made both of them more independent, made them more their own people, and not so much that they have to always do everything just like their friends or have everything just like their friends. It's more, you know, more independent, I think.
And you said they were polite and nice and kind and...
They're very, yes.
And that comes
and that
with
was
it.
Something I did want kids that I could take with me anywhere. And so whenever we went maybe to a really nice brunch for Christmas or Easter or whatever, or a dinner here or there or whatever, I wanted them not to run around the restaurant, not to scream and yell, and I did whatever I had to do to assure that that wouldn't happen. So I remember when they were little, you know, taking books and in mm-hmm. a bag and reading books to them or what, you know, just so that they would learn that they had to be quiet and nice and polite, and the napkins on the lap at home, and so that they can, when they go out, they always have their napkin on their lap, and you know, all that stuff, no elbows on the table, and they do say please and thank you a lot, and that's just the way I am, but I think it's, you know, it's worked out pretty well.
I agree with you. You know, my kids are grown and I have grandkids now, but I would rather be with our kids than anybody in the world, and they're just fun, and now we're friends, and we weren't. I mean, I think my daughter at least once a week went slamming into her room, yelling, "I hate you," at the top of
her
lungs.
Right, right.
But,
well, you know, I guess that's the thing, you know. I think some parents have a really hard time saying no, and because they don't want their kids not to like them.
Yeah.
But the problem is that you're not really there to be their friend.
That's,
you know,
exactly
ultimately
right.
Ultimately, you are. I mean, we are their best. We're their best friends that they'll ever have. They just really don't always know that.
That's
but
true.
But I think we really have to show them the ropes. We really have to be consistent, and then eventually, you know, if you don't happen to be great friends for a period of time, you will. You know,
you will.
Just like with you, I think it always turns around.
It does.
I never really had any trouble with my daughter until she became more independent when she went off to college. And I think it's a normal, natural thing. And so she's kind of doing what a lot of kids do much earlier. She's doing it later.
Mm-hmm.
But we still respect each other. We still like each other.
Right.
It's different. It's harder right now. But I don't think it will. It certainly won't always be this way. And I think she will eventually look back and appreciate what I've said. I think
she will.
And you know, it's just one of those life, you know, those moments, that maybe long moments, but, you know, periods of time where things aren't as easy as other times.
Right.
But,
and what you said about parents not wanting their kids to not like them, that's such a bogus thought, because your children are always going to love you.
Right.
They may not.
You have to risk that sometimes.
Right.
You know, though, of course, they're always going to. Right, you would certainly hope, and I believe that they always will love
they
us.
Will.
But,
they will. They will. They're wired to love,
you know,
their parents.
We're not that in vogue. You know, we're like, oh, they roll their eyes when they think about us. But you know, that it sometimes it just has to be that way, I think, in order to do a good job.
I think you're absolutely right. I do. Another thing in your book that I read and just hit me all over was, because I related to it, was in some of the last pages of the book, it said, "My biggest regret would be that I didn't trust myself enough sooner. I wish I had believed in myself more. I wish I could have been a little easier on myself, let myself off the hook occasionally." And don't you think so many people go through that?
I do. I don't know if... I don't know at what stage they go through it. I feel like I did things at different times than some other people, maybe because of working as a kid. You know, you're treated like an adult. Well, yeah, pretty much. You're expected to behave like an adult, and I think that it kind of messes you up a little as far as your development. I mean, you do develop and everything, but things happen at different times. And I think some things I had to really go back and figure out because I hadn't done it at the right time. But, yeah, I was always really hard on myself, and I believe like lots of people are, and perfectionistic and critical.
Yeah.
And you know, yeah, I wish I'd been more like my daughter. My daughter can let things go. I mean, things obviously bother her, but she's able to let them go. And I'm not like that. I certainly wasn't like that then. I'm better now, but I'm still not anything like her.
Yeah,
I wish I was like that, where I could just let it go.
Yeah, and you've got to. And at some point in my life, I finally realized that everything that happens in life, good and bad, has made me who I am today. And that's
right.
A pretty good person. I like myself a lot now, and I didn't always. So I think what we got to do is just celebrate who we are, keep moving forward, knowing that we've got all these lessons we've learned and use them, and know that we've got more lessons coming, and
right.
We'll use those too. And if our kids see us doing that, then it's easier for them to do it. I think it's imperative
right.
that our kids learn that they can get knocked down and get back up, and it's okay.
Right.
There's nothing
right.
wrong with that. It's just part of life. A few weeks ago, Melissa, I had a guy on the show, an author named Brad Meltzer, and he's written a book called Heroes for My Son. I highly recommend the book. But in the book, he talks about the Wright brothers, and he said that they would go out every day to fly their plane, and they would take all the gear and supplies that they needed to rebuild the plane every day because they knew it was going to crash. But they kept going back, and they knew, hoping that one day it would fly and not crash. And I think that's a tremendous lesson for us to teach our kids, you know, that it's okay. You're going to fly, you're going to crash, you're going to do whatever. You just keep trying. And
right.
I think that's how we should live our lives, learning from
right.
our crashes, but always believing we can fly. Don't you think?
Well, you know, my son is like that already with math.
That's
poor
great.
Poor kid. I mean, he tries. Ugh. I've never seen a kid so motivated. I mean, he just tries and tries. I've never had to say a word. He tries all on his own, and he has had a disastrous year. He might hate me saying this, but in math, I mean, he's just, and it's so awful because no one tries harder.
Oh, bless his heart.
But you know, it's the idea that he has that within him to know that, you know what, this isn't going to get me down. I'm just going to keep plugging along. And, you know, the only thing I've been able to say over the years is, you know, you'll have your light bulb moment, probably. You know, maybe not. Maybe you won't have it, you know, but I think you probably
at some
will.
Point. Yeah.
And, you know, you just gotta muddle through until that happens. But, you know, he that's all I've said. And like this year when he's had the hardest time, he's done it all on his own. And I'm so proud of his stick-to-itiveness.
That's
and
great.
He's really got that down, and that's what you really need to get through life. You got it. You're absolutely right with what you said. I mean, you have to keep plugging along, and you have to know that, you know, it's not always going to be this hard.
Right. Exactly. The book is called The Way I See It, A Look Back at My Life on Little House. Where's your next appearance?
Well, I'm done.
Are you done?
For now. I will be in Green Bay, Wisconsin at the end of July.
Okay.
But other than that, I'm done. I'm home as of last Friday, and I'm just catching up on stuff at home. So.
Oh, that's great. Well, good for you, and I hope all the cheeseheads come out to see you.
Oh, thank
in Green
you.
Bay.
Thank
and
you.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Melissa. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, well, thank you. I've had a great time.
Okay. Well, best of luck with the book.
Thank you so much.